escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias, pruebas de certificación de nivel intermedio B2 de inglés, convocatoria ordinaria de 2024 para la población escolar, prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta prueba consta de 3 tareas. Escuchará cada grabación 2 veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícela según se indica. Solo se admitirán respuestas en tinta negra o azul. Las tareas escritas a lápiz no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante toda la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. Atención, no escriba en los recuadros sombreados, son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to a talk about studying in 6 different Australian cities. Match each city 1 to 6 to the most suitable sentence A to J. There are 3 extra sentences you do not need. Write your answers in the table provided. City 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute to read the task.
Good morning, students. I know many of you are going into higher education and you are currently thinking of where to study. How about Australia? Let me give you some information about its most popular cities and their universities. Let's begin with Melbourne, the cultural capital of Australia and the city where the headquarters of the largest corporations are situated. If you do an MBA here, you will probably be able to get a job in one of its many successful firms. Moving on, Brisbane. This city is known for its beaches, sunny climate, and trendy nightlife. The tuition fees charged at local universities are currently the lowest in the country. Next one up, Sydney. It is the largest city and financial hub of Australia, and so it offers many employment opportunities for international students who wish to work their way through university. My personal favorite, Canberra. It is the capital of the country and home of the top-ranked National University of Australia. For highly demanding students who wish to pursue degrees either in science or in art, this is the place to be. Next stop, Perth. It is very popular with international students, and it is said that more than 50 languages are spoken on its main campus alone. So, no matter what course of studies you choose, your experience here will be culturally very enriching. Let's move on to Adelaide, which is regarded as the cleanest and safest city in the whole country, but also one of the least culturally diverse. Lots of green spaces and all the peace and quiet you need to really focus on your studying. Finally, the Gold Coast, which is home to several universities heavily investing in research and infrastructure. The cost of living here is lower than in any other Australian city, which makes up for the relatively high tuition fees required. So, what do you think? I say you should go for it. Anyway, if you need any further information, you know where to find me.
Listen again.
Good morning, students. I know many of you are going into higher education and you are currently thinking of where to study. How about Australia? Let me give you some information about its most popular cities and their universities. Let's begin with Melbourne, the cultural capital of Australia and the city where the headquarters of the largest corporations are situated. If you do an MBA here, you will probably be able to get a job in one of its many successful firms. Moving on, Brisbane. This city is known for its beaches, sunny climate, and trendy nightlife. The tuition fees charged at local universities are currently the lowest in the country. Next one up, Sydney. It is the largest city and financial hub of Australia, and so it offers many employment opportunities for international students who wish to work their way through university. My personal favorite, Canberra. It is the capital of the country and home of the top-ranked National University of Australia. For highly demanding students who wish to pursue degrees either in science or in art, this is the place to be. Next stop, Perth. It is very popular with international students, and it is said that more than 50 languages are spoken on its main campus alone. So, no matter what course of studies you choose, your experience here will be culturally very enriching. Let's move on to Adelaide, which is regarded as the cleanest and safest city in the whole country, but also one of the least culturally diverse. Lots of green spaces and all the peace and quiet you need to really focus on your studying. Finally, the Gold Coast, which is home to several universities heavily investing in research and infrastructure. The cost of living here is lower than in any other Australian city, which makes up for the relatively high tuition fees required. So, what do you think? I say you should go for it. Anyway, if you need any further information, you know where to find me.
This is the end of task one. Now turn to task two. Task two. Listen to a speech about some of the benefits of social media. Complete the statements 1 to 9 with no more than 3 words. Write your answers in the table provided. Statement 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the task.
Well, firstly, thank you so much for having me here this evening to talk about something that I'm really passionate about. Now, before I go into my points of why I'm such a huge advocate of social media, it's worth me just giving you a bit of background on me and my story and how I got into the world of social. So here I am, age 15. I'd been bullied for 10 years at school. I didn't really have any mates. I'd been hospitalized, had no social skills whatsoever, but I had a computer. And I turned to MySpace. I feel really old talking about MySpace right now. Hopefully some of you remember it. But I turned to MySpace and I posted this bulletin. And in this bulletin, I said, hey, look, I'm being bullied. And I talked a bit about my experience. And literally overnight, I had hundreds of people reach out to me. People were telling me about their own experiences of being bullied. People were giving me advice. And some people were even asking me for advice. And so here I am, this 15-year-old kid, very nervous, no confidence on the internet. And suddenly I'm talking about an issue of bullying. And I realized quite early on that this was far greater than I was. And it was something that affected so many people. And so this community of practice started to organically grow as young people started to come together, many of which had never met anybody before. People from across the world were coming together to give and share advice and to talk about the real life issues that they were having. And that was the infancy of Ditch the Label, which today is one of the largest anti-bullying charities in the world. Now, to put that into perspective, in the next 12 months, we're forecasted to help 1.5 million young people to overcome bullying and related issues. And that leads me on nicely to my first point, the fact that social media is such a powerful tool for anybody who is considered vulnerable in our society. That social media enables anybody who is considered vulnerable, who's being bullied or going through a difficult time, to instantly connect with people who are either going through that at that time or have been through it, to give and share advice. And that should never be overlooked. Social media enables people to come together to share ideas, to share a new vision for the world. You can talk to pretty much anybody on social media, whether they're your colleagues, world leaders, celebrities, activists. It is so, so important. And I think as well, you know, many of us in this room will have moved away for university. Some will have taken a gap year. We've all pretty much been on holiday. People move away, parents move away, friends move away. It's a fact of life. And when many of you graduate, you'll move abroad and work somewhere else. And I think what is so important is the fact that social media enables us to maintain relationships that we have in our lives. 20 years ago, it was very rare that you would stay in contact with people that you went to school or college or university with. Now social media enables you to do that. And sometimes those interactions are passive, but that's okay. It was my birthday last week, and I had a birthday party, and I had 40 friends who came to this cocktail party, and some of them I hadn't seen in 6 to 12 months, because, you know, when you're a professional, you're trying to manage your work-life balance. You just don't have the time. But we've been able to maintain those friendships and those relationships through the power of social media, and that's something that I think we can all relate to in here.
Listen again.
Firstly, thank you so much for having me here this evening to talk about something that I'm really passionate about. Now, before I go into my points of why I'm such a huge advocate of social media, it's worth me just giving you a bit of background on me and my story and how I got into the world of social. So here I am, aged 15. I'd been bullied for 10 years at school. I didn't really have any mates. I'd been hospitalized, had no social skills whatsoever, but I had a computer. And I turned to MySpace. I feel really old talking about MySpace right now. Hopefully some of you remember it. But I turned to MySpace and I posted this bulletin. And in this bulletin, I said, hey, look, I'm being bullied. And I talked a bit about my experience. And literally overnight, I had hundreds of people reach out to me. People were telling me about their own experiences of being bullied. People were giving me advice. And some people were even asking me for advice. And so here I am, this 15-year-old kid, very nervous, no confidence on the internet. And suddenly I'm talking about an issue of bullying. And I realized quite early on that this was far greater than I was, and it was something that affected so many people. And so this community of practice started to organically grow as young people started to come together, many of which had never met anybody before. People from across the world were coming together to give and share advice and to talk about the real life issues that they were having. And that was the infancy of Ditch the Label, which today is one of the largest anti-bullying charities in the world. Now, to put that into perspective, in the next 12 months, we're forecasted to help 1.5 million young people to overcome bullying and related issues. And that leads me on nicely to my first point, the fact that social media is such a powerful tool for anybody who is considered vulnerable in our society. Social media enables anybody who is considered vulnerable, who's being bullied or going through a difficult time, to instantly connect with people who are either going through that at that time or have been through it, to give and share advice. And that should never be overlooked. Social media enables people to come together to share ideas, to share a new vision for the world. You can talk to pretty much anybody on social media, whether they're your colleagues, world leaders, celebrities, activists. It is so, so important. And I think as well, you know, many of us in this room will have moved away for university. Some will have taken a gap year. We've all pretty much been on holiday. People move away, parents move away, friends move away. It's a fact of life. And when many of you graduate, you'll move abroad and work somewhere else. And I think what is so important is the fact that social media enables us to maintain relationships that we have in our lives. 20 years ago, it was very rare that you would stay in contact with people that you went to school or college or university with. Now social media enables you to do that. And sometimes those interactions are passive, but that's okay. It was my birthday last week, and I had a birthday party, and I had 40 friends who came to this cocktail party, and some of them I hadn't seen in 6 to 12 months, because, you know, when you're a professional, you're trying to manage your work-life balance. You just don't have the time. But we've been able to maintain those friendships and those relationships through the power of social media, and that's something that I think we can all relate to in here.
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Task 3. Listen to an extract from an interview in which Anusha tells her personal story of forgiveness. Decide if the sentences 1 to 10 are true or false according to the interview. Write your answers T, true, or F, false, in the table provided. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the task.
One instance which I always just cannot let go is this moment when I was in fourth grade, where it was the start of a new year, and my gym teacher for that class, she was calling out attendance, and when she got to my name, she called me Anushka instead of Anusha. And it was one of those moments where, like, she had said it wrong once, and then the next time, I think she had, like, gone over my name really quickly, where, like, she called out in passing, like, "Hey, Anushka, come over here," and I couldn't really say anything. And by the time you got to, like, the fourth time where you say someone's name wrong, it was just too awkward to say anything. So for the next 9 months, I just went by Anushka. And I just could not say anything because she was like a person in power, and I was honestly kind of scared of her. One of my friends had told the teacher, like, "Hey, you've been saying my friend's name wrong this entire time." And my teacher, she actually got mad at me. She kind of like reprimanded me in front of everyone, saying, like, "Why didn't you say anything sooner?" I was trying to fit in at school, and I felt like in order to fit in as an immigrant, I would have to change myself. And I felt like things like my Pakistani heritage, which includes my name, were getting in the way. So unfortunately, I kind of pushed back on my identity and told people to call me Annie. I also did other things like changing my hair color, wearing colored contacts. I kind of went that way all up until college.
Welcome back to The Science of Happiness. I'm Dacher Keltner. This week, we're exploring pathways to forgiveness. Our guest today tried a practice where she followed 9 steps to forgiveness created by Dr. Fred Luskin, the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Project. We have details of these steps in our show notes wherever you're listening right now. Today, we hear from our conversation with Anusha Syed, the illustrator and author of the children's book, That Is Not My Name. Anusha, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I love the title of your book, That's Not My Name. And it's a beautifully illustrated children's book, and it follows the journey of a young girl who's learning to take pride in her name, even though it's different from the names of the other kids around her.
Yeah.
What was it like for you, and how did you find artistic inspiration in that experience?
Well, I had a very complicated relationship with my name. I mean, my name is Anousheh Sayed, which is not exactly common.
No.
And so, you know, as a kid, people got it wrong. I mean, even as an adult, people get it wrong constantly. And there are these small microaggressions that happen, and over time they build up. And so if it was just one or two instances of someone, you know, making fun of like my school lunchbox or, you know, saying my name incorrectly, like that's one thing. But like over time, it did lead to me wanting to be a different person. And that's something that I really regret.
You know, one of the hardest practices in happiness, I think, is the forgiveness exercises that we promote and that have been tested in, you know, restorative justice programs and lab studies and the like. And it's often tricky to forgive people from our past or our current lives. And then you decided to orient this forgiveness practice to yourself. And I'm curious what was going on in your life that led you to think, maybe I should sort of think about forgiving myself before I think about the outside world.
Yeah, when I was like looking through these types of practices, the forgiveness one I thought was really interesting because while as much as I love my name right now, I didn't realize that I still kept some of that baggage that I held about not loving my name and my culture in the past. My mother tongue is supposed to be Urdu, but I cannot speak it at all, mostly because I was trying to distance myself away from it. And so I realized that I do have a little bit of just a little bit of tension of just like, why did I make those choices as a kid? Because I'm kind of stuck in this position now where I feel so distanced away from my culture. And so I thought it would be interesting to treat that as a little bit of a forgiveness practice.
Listen again.
One instance which I always just cannot let go is this moment when I was in fourth grade where it was the start of a new year and my gym teacher for that class, she was calling out attendance and when she got to my name, she called me Anushka instead of Anousheh. And it was one of those moments where like she had said it wrong once and then the next time I think she had like gone over my name really quickly where like she called out in passing like, hey Anushka, come over here, and I couldn't really say anything. And by the time you got to like the fourth time where you say someone's name wrong, it was just too awkward to say anything. So for the next 9 months I just went by Anushka. And I just could not say anything because she was like a person in power and I was honestly kind of scared of her. One of my friends had told the teacher like, hey, you've been saying my friend's name wrong this entire time. And my teacher, she actually got mad at me. She kind of like reprimanded me in front of everyone saying like, why didn't you say anything sooner? I was trying to fit in at school and I felt like I, in order to, you know, fit in as an immigrant, I would have to change myself. And I felt like things like my Pakistani heritage, which includes my name, were getting in the way. So unfortunately, I kind of pushed back on my identity and told people to call me Annie. I also did other things like changing my hair color, wearing colored contacts. I kind of went that way all up until college.
Welcome back to The Science of Happiness. I'm Dacher Keltner. This week, we're exploring pathways to forgiveness. Our guest today tried a practice where she followed 9 steps to forgiveness created by Dr. Fred Luskin, the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Project. We have details of these steps in our show notes wherever you're listening right now. Today, we hear from our conversation with Anousheh Sayed, the illustrator and author of the children's book, That Is Not My Name. Anousheh, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I love the title of your book, That's Not My Name. And it's a beautifully illustrated children's book, and it follows the journey of a young girl who's learning to
take pride in her name, even though it's different from the names of the other kids around her.
Yeah.
What was it like for you, and how did you find artistic inspiration in that experience?
Well, I had a very complicated relationship with my name. I mean, my name is Anousha Sayed, which is not exactly common.
No.
And so, you know, as a kid, people got it wrong. I mean, even as an adult, people get it wrong constantly. And there are these small microaggressions that happen, and over time they build up. And so if it was just one or two instances of someone, you know, making fun of like my school lunchbox or, you know, saying my name incorrectly, like that's one thing. But like over time, it did lead to me wanting to be a different person. And that's something that I really regret.
You know, one of the hardest practices in happiness, I think, is the forgiveness exercises that we promote and then have been tested in, you know, restorative justice programs and lab studies and the like. And it's often tricky to forgive people from our past or our current lives. And then you decided to orient this forgiveness practice to yourself. And I'm curious what was going on in your life that led you to think, maybe I should sort of think about forgiving myself before I think about the outside world.
Yeah, when I was like looking through these types of practices, the forgiveness one I thought was really interesting because while as much as I love my name right now, I didn't realize that I still kept some of that baggage that I held about not loving my name and my culture in the past. My mother tongue is supposed to be Urdu, but I cannot speak it at all, mostly because I was trying to distance myself away from it. And so I realized that I do have a little bit of there's a little bit of tension of just like, why did I make those choices as a kid? Because I'm kind of stuck in this position now where I feel so distanced away from my culture. And so I thought it would be interesting to treat that as a little bit of a forgiveness practice.
This is the end of task 3 and the end of the listening test.